You're listening to Family Talk, the radio broadcasting division of the James Dobson Family Institute. I am that James Dobson, and I'm so pleased that you've joined us today.
One of the greatest tools of the opposition in having parents not have their voices be heard is to call us overprotective or call us names, because parents recoil to that. It's like using the term racist or sexist. And so the term overprotection is the new buzzword. And what I say to those Hollywood types is, protective? You bet I'm protective. I'm the mama. It's my job to protect my kids.
Well, welcome to Family Talk, the broadcast division of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. I'm Roger Marsh, and be sure to be listening at the end of the program today. We'll have a special announcement about how you can stand with us financially and take advantage of our special $300,000 May matching grant. Now, on today's program, you're going to hear an insightful conversation Dr. Dobson had with author and columnist Rebecca Hagelin. They'll be discussing the topic of preparing parents to fight the culture war for their kids. Rebecca is president and CEO of Rebecca Hagelin Communications and Marketing. She's the author of three books and previously served as vice president of communications and marketing for the Heritage Foundation. Now, today's program touches on some very sensitive topics, and it may not be suitable for younger listeners, so parental discretion is advised. Here now is Dr. James Dobson's classic conversation with Rebecca Hagelin, right here on Family Talk.
Well, Rebecca, let me start with this. You have a lot of statistics and a lot of research in your book that just caused the hair to stand up on the back of my neck. And let me read some of them. Just with regard to the internet, there are 4.2 million pornography websites, more than any other topic or area on the internet. It's almost impossible for kids not to stumble onto them. You said last time that 90% of children between 8 and 16 find themselves unwittingly looking at pornography. Where'd you find that statistic?
That study was done by the London School of Economics. And to just show how this hits home so close, I just did a lecture on my book, and I had a mom come up to me afterwards that I've known for some 20 years, who's been in the public policy battle, been fighting right there with me. And she said, "I feel real convicted because my husband and I have been having trouble with our computer and it keeps breaking down. And so we haven't bothered to put a filter on it. And the other night, my 8-year-old daughter woke up at midnight crying. And when I asked her what's wrong, she said, 'Mommy, I did something very bad.' 'Well, what did you do, honey?' She said, 'I typed your name in,' because she knew that her mother had a website, but she got the name wrong. She put in .com instead of .org in her mom's first name. And up popped one of the most vile internet sites. And the little girl said, 'And mommy, I saw really bad stuff.' And her mom said, 'Well, honey, you know, I'm sorry you did it by accident.' She said, 'But I stayed and I looked at it.'"
Yeah.
And this little—
She'll never get that out of her
head. She'll never forget the 8-year-old girl, because mom and dad didn't understand that once you shatter a child's innocence, you've shattered their world forever. And the simple act of putting a filter on the internet could have prevented that. It's so sad because they're involved in their church and public policy. They're good people. I love them. They're some of my dearest friends. But this is the mistake that many moms and dads listening are making. We're forgetting that we have to be eternally vigilant even in our own homes.
Mm-hmm. You just think of how different it was when I was a child. Parents didn't have to worry about this, you know.
Not at all.
You have statistics in this book in regard to television. This one blew me away. 81% of children between 2 and 7 watch television without their parents.
Right. And a more recent survey than that says that the vast majority of children of all ages, who most of them are watching TV in their bedrooms behind closed doors, their parents don't know what they're watching. They have no rules as to what they're watching. And the children are questioning that. The children are wondering.
They know what's wrong.
They know what's wrong, but if mom and dad aren't there to stop them, see, what parents have to realize is when you as a mom or dad are silent about the culture or about what your children are listening and watching, that is an implied endorsement to the child's developing mind. The child knows it's wrong instinctively. That 8-year-old girl knew it was wrong, but it was coming into the house. Somehow it was okay that it came into the house. But if mom and dad don't stand up and say it's wrong, that child begins to lose their sensitivity to what's right and what's wrong.
What is your answer, Rebecca, to the Hollywood crowd that says, if you don't like what we're putting on television, change the channel?
Change it to what? Even if you throw the TV out, get rid of your internet, and ban ice cream stops because you're afraid of the pornography in the gas station stores and don't go to the mall or don't go to the movie, your children are hardly safe. I had 6 children in the big Hagelin family van heading down Highway 95 toward Florida. And as soon as we got to North Carolina, there were huge billboards, topless, we dare, we bear, advertising these trashy little topless bars that have popped up all across the country. And you can't even drive down the highway without being assaulted. And so we pulled in a while down the road to stop and get a break at a gas station. And attached to this gas station was one of those ice cream stands where I could get some of my yummy Rocky Road ice cream. And we were standing there paying for our ice cream cones, and there was a product right at eye level called Horneus Goatweed, sex stimulant pills for men and women. So I scurried my then 11-year-old daughter and her friend way over and said, go stand over there while I finish paying, only to turn around and see they were standing by the magazine rack, which was filled with porn, and some seedy guy reading a porn magazine. Grab the kids, jump back in the van, drive down the road. The assault continues with the topless bars. We pull in a Burger King later on that night. There's a television in the corner playing a made-for-TV movie. The adults start taking their clothes off. Everywhere we go, from the grocery store checkout stands, where the trashy women's magazines are, to even our kids' textbooks, our values are under assault. And I think you're right, Dr. Dobson. I think good moms and dads are getting sick and tired of it. So it's up to mom and dad to every single day commit to the battle. Say, I have 3 teenagers, and it is a daily battle.
What do you say to the Hollywood moguls and people like that who say, so what do you want to do, Rebecca? You want to make a cloister out of your home? You want to protect them from every cultural influence? You're going to make them weird? You've heard that argument.
Oh, you hear it all the time. I mean, one of the greatest tools of the opposition and having parents not have their voices be heard is to call us overprotective or call us names, because parents recoil to that. It's like using the term racist or sexist. You know, when you're talking about abortion, if a man talks about abortion, the way women shut him down is by saying you're a sexist. And so the term overprotection is the new buzzword. And what I say to those Hollywood types is, protective? You bet I'm protective. I'm the mama. It's my job to protect my kids.
You're not embarrassed about that.
I am not embarrassed about it. As a matter of fact, that's my role. That's my God-given role. Because I know that if I don't question the material, if I don't teach my children how to make good character judgments, if I don't build in them a moral compass, there's nobody that's going to do it.
You have found yourself going to the schools and questioning what they were teaching and what they were doing and so on. How do you deal with the intimidation that sometimes occurs when they say, you know, what are you, an extremist, some kind of right-wing fundamentalist? You know, they've got all kinds of names that they call you. Do you recoil from that? Does it sting you? Do you go home and cry? What do you do?
I have to admit that the times that I've had to pick up the phone and call a teacher about what's been going on in school, my heart beats a little faster before I pick up the phone. It's a little nerve-wracking. But then I just remind myself this is my job. This is what God has called me to do. And one great example of that is when my son entered the 9th grade in public school, we received a letter from the county inviting all the parents of the high school with thousands and thousands of children to come see the sex ed curriculum. So my husband and I showed up expecting to see a large auditorium filled with parents. We were 2 of 7 parents who even bothered to show up and see the sex ed curriculum.
What's going on there? I simply don't understand that.
This is, and I'm actually losing my point a bit, but it's important to say this. Over the past several years, when I've received all this email from parents saying they feel helpless, they feel there's an onslaught of the culture, I took these thousands of emails and I divided them pretty much into 3 stacks. Of why parents aren't involved. One is they do feel tired. They feel that there's this onslaught that they can't handle and they're overwhelmed. And what I say is, the mass marketers are never too tired to go after your children, so you have to be vigilant. The second category I put parents into is that they're really just disconnected. They're too busy with their own lives and their careers and their homes, and they want to have the beautiful gardens. They've never stopped to see the pressures that are being put on their children, and they really don't understand that if we would relieve our children of some of this pressure by standing in the gap, the children would be grateful. And then the third category of why a lot of parents aren't engaged is because many parents today were raised in the hippie generation, and they never learned to deal with peer pressure themselves. So my goodness, mom and dad, if you've never learned to stand up to peer pressure, how can you teach your children to do that?
Rebecca, I think there's a fourth one. Consider this. I think a lot of parents do not get involved in defending their kids at school and in the culture because they don't want to embarrass their children. Their children
That's
say,
true.
Mom, do not come to school. I don't want you on that campus, right?
Yeah, that's true. And where I was originally going with the thought is we went and we saw the sex ed curriculum. Again, my husband and I, 2 of 7 parents who bothered to show up. Of course, it contained graphic depictions of sex. It was full of moral relativism, and it was not what we want our child to study. So we opted him out. The only child in the whole high school that was opted out that year was Drew Hagelin. And let me tell you, he was not happy about it. But I sat him down, and my husband and I did, and we said, Drew, we're your parents. I, as your mother, feel this great mantle of responsibility to raise you according to how I feel God has told me to raise you, because I'm the one that's going to have to be accountable. Now, we're going to make it as easy for you as is absolutely possible. So we opted him out, and he went to the library every day and did an alternative assignment. Well, it wasn't until the end of the semester that he told me he had to go every day in front of his peers to get a pass to the library. Well, I was fighting mad when I heard that.
Yeah.
So when the next semester rolled around, I called the school and I talked to that administrator and I said, it is absolutely immoral to humiliate a child by making him come in front of his peers to get a pass to the library every day. This is a good kid. You know that he's an honor student, that he's got strong character and has never given you any problems in the whole weeks that he's been at this school. And the administrator said, you know, you're right. I never thought about it from the child's perspective. And so we changed the rule for the whole school, where you find the teacher at lunch, they give you a week's worth of passes for the entire week. I had to ask. I had to have the guts to call the administrator and ask.
You know, when the shoe's on the other foot, they do understand that many schools don't want anything having to do with Christmas celebrations because there may be a Jewish child or a Muslim child there. And so they say, we can't do this because it would be upsetting to one or two, to the minority. But when that minority is a conservative Christian or the child of a conservative Christian family, then they don't understand it. And it didn't ever occur to them.
It never occurred to them. And it never occurred to them that the alternative assignment that they gave my son wasn't something that I wouldn't like. The alternative assignment was to every week in Washington and Tuesday, the Washington Post has a health section. And the assignment was for the child to read the health section, pull 5 articles out, and every Monday for the previous week, you turn in 5 typed pages on 5 different health articles. So I called the school and I said, I don't exactly believe the Washington Post. I don't know that their health information is accurate. How about we find other health magazines that I put a lot of faith in, and he writes about those. And they said, okay, just attach the articles. So we spent our fun semester going through Heritage Foundation studies on how abstinence education is more effective than regular sex education, and how teaching kids about contraceptives doesn't work in helping to reduce their sexual activity. And we did all of these studies, and my son ended up getting an A actually for the semester.
Well, this is kind of a testimonial to a school where at least they would listen to you, you know, and there are many schools out there that will.
It's all about loving your children and keeping the vision in your mind about the type of adult you want that child to become. And hey, I believe there should be a protected space of innocence for children. And moms and dads need to make sure that happens. You, Dr. Dobson, you've written about this many times, how children have the latency period where little girls think boys are yucky and little boys think girls have cooties. That's a crucial part of their development. But yet you take these same children who are in this natural, healthy stage of life and you throw them in the classroom and they're taught about graphic sex. It's
astounding. And homosexuality. And make them question their own nature.
Right. And if moms and dads don't stand up and make their voices be heard, the problem will only get worse. You can certainly look at the breakup of the family, creating this huge culture of rejection that so many children are being raised in today. And I'm afraid we're going to even suffer more of that because today's children aren't being taught the vital role of fathers in the household, for instance.
Rebecca, you've been very candid in your book, Home Invasion, about your own children and some of the illustrations that have come out of your relationship with your kids. And you and your daughter have discussed the clothing that she's going to wear and have set up some guidelines. What are they?
Yes. The one rule we have when we go shopping, my 13-year-old daughter and I, is we both have to like the outfit before we buy it. She has to like it, and I have to like it. I'm not going to make her wear something that she feels nerdy or dorky in, and she's not going to wear something that I think makes her look like a little streetwalker. And if you go around the country today and you look at 10, 11-year-olds, you see a huge problem there where mom and dad aren't doing their jobs. It used to be a dad's great privilege to protect his daughter's honor and virtue.
Absolutely. And if you invaded that world, somebody's likely to have gotten shot.
Absolutely. I had a mom who called into a radio show I was on recently who said, I hear what you're saying. My daughter's 12, but we spent 3 hours at the mall and I finally gave in because there just weren't any clothing items there. And I said, and what did you teach your daughter when you gave in? That it was more important for you to hurry home than it was to uphold the standard that you had told her at the beginning of the day that you were going to uphold.
You also told about one of your daughter's friends who came over to the house.
When my daughter has new friends come over to the house, invariably, because this is even rampant in the church, the little girls are wearing shirts that are plunging necklines and their bellies are showing and even the backs of their rear ends are showing. Their jeans are cut so low. This is a problem in the church. It's not just in the public schools. So invariably, little girls will come over to our house and I'm at the door to greet them. And I have this nice little speech that I've given many of them. And it goes something like this. Sarah, God gave you a beautiful body. And he created you unique and special. And you're a girl of value. And your body is to be respected. So let's go upstairs. And you can go through my closet and find whatever you want. Or Kristen's room. And we're going to cover you up while you're in our household. Because we have a lot of teenage boys around here. And I don't want any of them gawking at you and treating them less than who God created you to be.
Oh, that's so good. What was her reaction?
The stunned look on the faces is just something to capture with a photograph, if I could. Because first of all, they've never had anybody tell them that.
That they were of value.
That they're of value, that their bodies are something to be respected. And secondly, they've never been invited up to go through somebody's mom's closet and pilfer through everything, which I'm glad to do because it's all about building a good rapport with the kids by making them feel welcome in your household, too.
You talked about a section of this book, Home Invasion, that you referred to as a safe house. What do you mean by that again?
Well, safe houses are those homes that I know share the values that my husband and I have determined for our household. We have very social children, and they have scores of friends. But there's a real core of about 9 homes that our families have partnered with, where we all know the children have to be respectful. We know their television viewing is monitored. We know their internets have filtered. And so our kids flow freely back and forth from each other's houses. You know, every so often, your child will say something that really gives you a warm, encouraging feeling in your heart. A couple of weeks ago, we were up at about 2 o'clock in the morning with our 16 and 17-year-old boy, and they had about 6 of their friends, and we were just hanging out in the living room talking. And one of them, Richard, said out of the blue, "Isn't it great, guys? I mean, I just feel like I'm in my own house here. Isn't it great how when we go to each other's houses, we all feel like we're with our own families?"
No, that's neat.
And I thought, thank you, Lord. In Home Invasion, like you said, it's not about building walls that shut our children off from the rest of the world. It's first and foremost about mom and dad building within ourselves the strength of courage and conviction so that we can then teach our children strong character values so that when they go out in the world, they have a moral compass and they know how to use it. And moms and dads, your children, if you do that, they're going to be the leaders of their generation. When they're adults, they're going to be the ones recognized of strong character that people trust to make decisions. We're doing our children tremendous favors. We're not just protecting them physically and morally. We're helping them build their very best futures.
Rebecca, the last third of your book is given to resources and suggestions and educational resources and books and organizations that will help.
I've got helplines where you can call 24 hours a day to get parenting tips and internet filters and great books like yours, Dr. Dobson. I talk about your wife Shirley's book, Certain Peace in Uncertain Times, about the power of prayer and how that's a great tool God gave us to strengthen us and give us wisdom.
And resources regarding legal concerns.
Yes.
And marriage is here, and videos and books and marketing. There's just a lot in this book that I hope parents will take advantage of.
Well, thank you. My heart is a mom that interacts with other mothers on a daily basis who are fighting the battle is to give them strength and encouragement and hope.
The name of the book is Home Invasion, Protecting Your Family in a Culture That's Gone Stark, Raving Mad. Thank you, Rebecca. I really appreciate you writing this book and for the passion that's behind it.
Well, there certainly are things that you can do to protect your kids online. You've been listening to a classic conversation featuring Dr. James Dobson and author Rebecca Hagelin here on Family Talk. If you'd like to find out more about Rebecca or her book called Home Invasion, just visit our website at drjamesdobson.org/Family Talk. Of course, Family Talk is a listener-supported broadcast outreach, and we would appreciate your prayers and faithful financial support. In fact, every donation you make helps us maintain a strong Christian voice in the public square. Right now, during the month of May, we have been blessed by some special friends of our ministry with a matching grant of $300,000. So for every dollar we receive this month, it will automatically be matched up to our $300,000 goal. Now, this is a great way to help even more families and marriages. Your donation will have double the impact. Every dollar you donate will help us as we fight for pro-life and traditional marriage issues, God-ordained gender identity, and a biblical worldview that parents can grab onto and teach your children. Now, to make a donation online, go to drjamesdobson.org. That's drjamesdobson.org, and you can make a donation securely right there on our homepage. If you prefer, you can also give a gift by phone when you call 877-732-6825. That's 877-732-6825. I'm Roger Marsh, and on behalf of all of us here at the JDFI, thank you for your prayers and your faithful financial support. And be sure to join us again next time right here for another edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
With today's Dr. Dobson Minute, here's Dr. James Dobson.
Parents should have some firm objectives in mind that'll help guide their child-rearing efforts. It's my view that there are two principles, two objectives that can serve as runway lights to guide the entire parent-child relationship. The first is to convey an awareness of love to our sons and daughters. Without it, they wither like a plant without water. The second is equally important, but less commonly recognized. It's the need to teach our kids to respect our leadership as parents. The child's relationship with the loving authority of his parents sets the stage for his attitude toward every other form of authority he will confront in life. With these two beacons firmly in place, your child has a good chance of making a successful flight and a safe landing beyond adolescence.
For more information, visit drdobsonminute.org.